Headlights pierce a drifting fog. The sleeping streets of your once familiar town now veiled in an eerie, unexpected mist. A simple change in weather blankets you in the unknown. We go about our lives as if we know what's going to happen. What will appear around the bend? But every now and then, life can find a way to shake you from your sleep, and you find yourself in a world of real magic. Dark and light, with every shade of skulking shadow in between. From trans-dimensional deer and sinister spirits, luring you into the woods. To sneaker-wearing street ghosts and dead, disembodied hands. Join us on this episode of Believe Hole,
yes!
As we share strange but true tales of the inexplicable and the unknown.
Conspiracy,
synchronicity,
Sasquatch,
homunculus,
alien races,
Satanism in Hollywood,
MK Ultra,
Tartaria.
There's like a whole. I've been watching this one guy.
Close the door, in
jury.
Close your door.
What's the
inner earth disagreements?
Ghost Dad.
I like that movie.
Dogman,
Bohemian Grove,
Corey Feldman,
magicians are demons,
specters, and
spirit summoning,
paralysis,
strange disappearances,
sky whale phenomena,
yes!
Alternative history,
shadow people.
Shh, quiet! I'm trying to say words with my mouth.
It's getting dicey out there.
Poltergeists.
That's cool.
Anunnaki.
What is the moon?
Elf towers. I would never talk about it. That's old.
Y2K.
Cover-ups.
Apocalyptic catastrophe.
Vampire. Well, hello, hello.
Hi.
What's up?
Welcome to Bleeful. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jeremy.
My name is John, and I am here.
Today, we got an excellent show coming up.
Yes.
A lot of great stories today.
Yeah, we're doing Strange Listener Stories 23.
I guess we should say Merry Christmas, right?
Oh, and Merry Christmas to you guys out there, or however you celebrate the snowy season.
Yes, yes.
We'll be dropping this on New Year's Eve.
Christmas Eve. Yeah. Mm. Otherwise, we'd be saying Happy New
that's
Year.
That's the right word.
Yeah. Yeah, and because of that, we thought not only would this be perfect time to do Strange Listener Stories 23 just because those are always so fun, but because it's the classic tradition in Victorian era England would be to tell ghost stories around a chimney fire. That was like what you did back then.
That's right.
It was told like ghost stories on Christmas Eve.
The haunting of Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very mysterious time. It's always been the winter solstice and everything. But yeah, so it's going to be fun. It's going to, I think, excite you guys, make you curious out there. These stories are excellent this time.
Yeah.
It's awesome that we have more people leaving voicemails on our system, which you can do. If you go to bleefhole.com, you got a story to share. We have a way you can actually use your phone to leave your message with your voice, and that always makes the story more credible.
Exactly. And if you have a actual computer and a decent microphone, you can also use the SpeakPipe feature on your computer.
That's the best way to go if you have a real microphone.
But these stories today are going to, I think, make your Christmas bright, even though some of them are a little dark or mysterious.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not your typical Victorian era Christmas ghost storytelling session, because like true Bleeful fashion, they're not just ghost stories. It's a great mixture of strange phenomena.
Yeah. I need it because I watched a clip of Charlie Brown's Christmas.
It was depressing.
I didn't realize how sad. Like, you know, the music, the doo-doo-doo.
Yeah.
And then, but Charlie Brown's like, I should be happy around Christmas this time of year, every year. I just feel so depressed.
Yeah. Christmas is coming, but I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I just don't understand Christmas, I guess. I always end up feeling depressed.
Charlie Brown, you're the only person I know who can take a wonderful season like Christmas and turn it into a problem. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you're the Charlie Browniest.
I just don't remember being that sad.
Yeah, well, it's because you didn't feel the pangs of depression as a child, so it just kind of went over your head.
Yeah, that's true. But now I get it. And that's sad.
Are you depressed?
Sometimes. It gets dark early.
It's true.
Anyway, but this is not going to be a depressing episode. This is going to be full of excitement and intrigue.
Yes.
Yes.
What's our first story, Chris?
Hate to bring it back, Chris.
coming up in this episode, to give you a bird's eye view, and that plays into the first story, actually. But we've got luring forest fairies.
And it's one of our most intriguing submissions, I think, because it ends with a close call with a potential fatal outcome from the eyewitness.
Oh.
And we've got dogs digging up inhuman disembodied hands.
That's a crazy story.
Yeah. And you got to have disembodied hands.
Dead disembodied hands. We haven't had one of those yet. They're usually creepy and alive.
That's true. Good point. A glitching deer of Scotland's Gore Bridge. That is a unique story we're going to be telling in the second half of the episode. And of course, you can't have a Christmas ghost storytelling session without having a great Christmas haunting. So we have a haunted Christmas Eve at the Stanley Hotel.
Nice.
Which, of course, is the famous, you know, Stephen King wrote The Shining in those hallowed grounds.
Yeah, the outside shots of the film The Shining were shot there. So yeah, that's perfect setting. The snowy, mysterious Christmas.
Yes. So without further ado, let's throw some Victorian firewood on the inferno and tell our first tale. This comes to us from Isabel, and I call it Quoth the Ravens, plural. And this took place in Huntersville, North Carolina, 2003. This is a great story. This story was told to me by my grandfather, and I found out later that it was only told to me and not to anybody else in the family. I am the eldest of his 5 grandchildren, and I guess you could say I'm just more open to things unseen and unexplained than the rest. A little backstory on my grandpa. He was an avid outdoorsman his whole life. He grew up in Idaho and Washington in a ranching family, a family with people missing thumbs from roping accidents. He was a real salt-of-the-earth guy, never spoke about anything paranormal, a Christian man who loved to hunt. He had many friends in various Native American tribes and was genuinely loved by all. He was later a teacher and fought in Vietnam, and he also was a hunting guide himself for a time, spending much of his time in Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Canada, Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. I say all this to stress that 1, he was in the woods constantly, and 2, he was not a person to make things up. He was not a storyteller and never talked about anything odd he saw in all his decades in the woods, until this story that he told only to me. So one day, my grandpa and a few of his buddies are out hunting in an area of Idaho they were unfamiliar with. So they had hired these other 2 native men who lived in the area to guide their hunt. Grandpa said that they were having a bit of trouble finding any deer in the beginning, and they were getting tired and a bit discouraged. But having driven all the way from Oregon, they didn't want to give up yet. He said that at this point, the 2 guides ushered them into this area. There was a mostly open field with just a few pine trees in it. And along the edge of this clearing, there was an old fence post. He said it looked like there used to be a whole fence there for livestock many years ago, but now it was only a few posts resembling a fence. And there, sitting on this fence, were 2 huge ravens. He said that even from a few paces away, the ravens looked massive. But other than that, he didn't think anything of it. Until the party stopped, short of the ravens, and one of the guides slowly and quietly approached the birds, who had not yet flown away. The guide spoke to the ravens in what my grandpa assumed was his native language. He said he was surprised. The other native guides who had stayed back with the hunting party leaned over to the men and quietly said, quote,
"He's asking where the deer are."
The party had become very quiet, not really knowing what to think. It was the surprise of my grandfather's life when he watched as one of the ravens responded to the guide in the same human language that was spoken to it by the man. The bird did not caw or make normal bird noises. It spoke in a human language that only the guides understood. I often imagine how I would react if a wild animal spoke words right in front of me, and I do not believe I would handle it well. The conversation was short, seemed to be no nonsense. The guide asked, and the raven answered. My grandfather did not ask what the raven had said to the man in his own language, probably too freaked out at the moment, although he wouldn't tell me that. This was very clearly in the middle of nowhere, and it did not seem planned to anyone in the group. The birds were clearly wild, my grandpa had said. The party then left and continued following the two guides, although much more quietly this time. They did end up, shortly after, finding some deer, and everyone's tags were filled. Grandpa never spoke about the event again to me, but the story stuck with me, and I know he thought about it often. He never liked ravens after that. It is a great regret in my life that I don't remember what tribe these hunting guides were from. Not sure if you can use this, but thought I'd share anyway. Blessings, Isabel.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I love that story. One of my favorites I think we've ever had submitted.
Oh, it's super unique.
Very magical.
Yeah.
It's weird that he didn't want to talk about it, I guess.
Well, it sounded like from her description that he was a very like straight-laced kind of traditional, probably you don't want to talk about this sort of stuff kind of thing, you know?
Right. Just too far outside the paradigm of what he believes.
Or what people around him believe.
Right.
And this would have happened probably, you know, as her grandfather, probably would have happened at least, you know, at the most recent, probably like the 60s or something.
It's interesting when, because you can look at that two ways. Either, you know, if the first one is like, okay, it's your grandfather telling you a fun story, like a tall tale kind of thing that grandfathers like to do, spin yarns, entertain, depending on when he told her, whether if it was when she was really young, obviously if he told her when she was like 20 or, you know, that wouldn't make sense. But the problem with that idea of like him just making it up is why would he just tell the one child in the family of five who is open to that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sounds almost like he felt vulnerable.
Yeah, almost like you want to tell someone that might believe you, you can't talk to it about it with anyone else.
Yeah. Also, she stressed that he was not a storyteller. Like, it's not something he did. He wasn't like our Grandpa Berg, who was very like, you know, had always had a crazy story to tell.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. But so ravens, aren't they? You can train ravens, right? And they have some speech ability.
Yeah. We talked about ravens a little bit before in relationship to a story, but they can speak, I think they can mimic up to about 100 words. And I guess they have a unique brain structure that's actually close to human brains.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so this is biologically possible then?
Yeah, at least the language part.
But the understanding of it is obviously the magical aspect.
Right.
It's not just a parrot kind of thing.
I mean, yeah. Well, that's the thing too. But also there was a study done where ravens can actually communicate information, not just, you know, repeat things.
Really?
Yeah, I found one where they showed that raven chicks as young as 4 months exhibit cognitive skills on par with great apes and young children up to 7 years old, young human children.
So instead of like an ape signing something, a raven would actually say the word deer over there, but in its own raven dialect.
I mean, maybe. That still seems like a stretch to me.
Yeah.
Especially considering it was interesting these ravens were two giant ravens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible, I suppose, that it was a native language that her grandfather wasn't familiar with and that the other Native Americans he was with that he had brought along with him that were his friends also didn't recognize the language. And maybe they had trained these ravens.
Yeah. But even then, that's pretty specific. Like, what are they saying? Like south by southwest, 2 miles, like that specific information. You think if they were training, they would just train to go circle above,
right?
You know, or head the direction to actually speak. So maybe, I mean, then of course you have the idea of like shape-shifting and the more magical possibilities.
Right. Well, according to a lot of Native American tribes in North America, ravens are supposed to be messengers, specifically, I guess, between like spiritual and physical realms, but they do deliver messages. So maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah. I love the story though.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thanks, Isabel.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Jinx. What's our next on the docket for this Christmas storytelling session?
Well, if this tickles your fancy, I thought we could do the fairy lure story that we got from Anna.
Tickles is so good.
A strange way to put it.
This is a great story because it is, we talk about a lot, dark fairies, you know, the discrepancy between the Disney sort of fairy that you grew up learning about.
Yeah.
And you get into our line of work and you realize that there's a much more dark aspect to real fairies.
The sinister lure aspect of whatever these elementals are in the wilderness.
Right. And this is I think our first one we've had submitted that has a near tragic end to the story because of the trickster nature, without spoiling it. But let's hear this. This is called Fairy Lure.
So I wanted to share an experience I had when I was a kid in South Carolina. I had a brother and a sister who both owned homes in South Carolina, and we were basically trying to live there. We had just moved from California. And so we were living with both my brother and my sister until we could figure out our living situation. But my sister's house was surrounded by forest, basically. And as a kid growing up in California and in the city and in apartments, a forest is basically another world. And it was magical. And so my brother and I spent lots of time out in the forest. We weren't supposed to, but we still did because we were kids. And one afternoon, I remember asking my brother to go out to the forest with me. And he was, I don't know, busy playing video games or watching a movie. But I found myself walking into the forest. And that's pretty odd because I would not do that. Usually go out there by myself, but I did. I went down there and I went down the embankment and I ended up in the ravine, which was this very beautiful, magical place. It had like 1,000 little tiny streams and 1,000 little tiny catfishes, baby catfishes swimming everywhere. Or it could have been tadpoles, I'm not sure. but they were like little black swimming things. And basically, I was out there and all of a sudden, I had this intense feeling like something, I wasn't alone. So I looked up into the tree line of where I felt like there was something there. And I saw this sparkly light kind of like whizzing through the trees. And just so you know, this is probably like 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon in South Carolina in the summertime. It wasn't a firefly and it was not like a light, like a flashlight or anything like that. It was sparkly lights, like as if it was fireworks. And as it was zipping through the trees, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh my gosh, is that a fairy? And I'm a kid, you know, so I'm thinking Tinkerbell fairy. And then it gently flies down into the ravine. And in a moment, as if it saw that I had seen it, it stopped. And then it zipped right back up into the tree line. And so all of the movement was pretty intentional and it actually made me like super excited. And then I just watched it in the tree line and then zipped back and forth as if it was trying to like find a place to hide. But then it just kind of came back out and then it just stood there or was hovering there and then came back down into the ravine and it was right in front of me. And it was probably 20, 30 feet away. And then I went right back up into the ravine and then it stopped. And in that moment, I felt like, oh, it wants me to follow it. And so as a kid, I was thinking, oh, that's Tinkerbell. And I followed it. I ran up in the opposite direction of my sister's house and I was following this sparkly light that I thought was a fairy. The light would come to me and then move away, come to me and then move away as if it was kind of antagonizing me, like catch me if you can kind of feeling. And I was super giddy, I was super happy and just like excited. And I could hear my laughter as I was chasing after this, trying to grab it with my hands. And then all of a sudden, I have this burning sensation on my face, and I realize that I'm no longer in the forest, and it's the heat of the sun on my face. And I, as if I was waking up from like a trance, I see my surroundings, and I am probably 6 feet away from going over a cliff. And I look around, and I don't see the light anymore, and this deep dread falls over me. Or realization that I was just about to run over a cliff and it was about 100 to 200 foot drop into another heavily forested area. There's like nothing for miles and I immediately get terrified and I turn around and I run full speed back to my sister's house. And I think it took me like 5 to 10 minutes of pure running just to get back to the ravine, to a place I was kind of recognizing the scenery. And then I realized in that moment, as I was running, like, was that a fairy? Did I see a fairy? And if that was a fairy, why did it do that? And I thought it was fun, but actually it's scary. I was out in the middle of the forest, out in the middle of nowhere, and I could have died. I made it back home, and to this day, that was the only experience I've ever had with anything that I could probably say was not, like, paranormal ghost. So thanks.
Jeez. Wow. I'm glad you're still alive.
Yeah.
And not murdered by a fairy.
Yeah, that is nuts.
Well, you hear that all the time. And I mean, of course, Tim Marcinko's book, Disembodied Voices, The Lure, right? Being lured into the wilderness. And then, but to actually hear a story of a child who believes they're following a fairy, this obvious light during the day, this glowing thing during daylight.
Yeah, like a fairy godmother.
Yeah, leading you out and thinking it's all fun and games, which is exactly what you would think. And this is such a typical, like, classic fairy story.
Yeah.
Like, warning of the dark fairy, you know?
This is why they should have the old stories on Disney films and Disney cartoons. Like, tell it the way it was told back in the day. Then you'll learn to not trust the fairies.
I think Disney has a deal with the dark fairies.
Maybe.
You know? Give them a little bit of that children's blood and get a little stock raise on Wall Street. Right?
That'd be it.
That's my theory. I'm sticking to it. But anyways, I thought that was a fantastic, fantastic fairy story.
Almost killed by a fairy as a child.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sending that in, Anna.
Yeah. Watch your kids in the woods.
Yeah. All right. Skipping right along so we can maximize our story count here in this episode. This comes from a hero of the whole, Lindsay Maves.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of you might know her, those in the live chat tonight or on regulars on the Facebook group. This is a fascinating story that she had sent in, and I missed it a long time ago because it came in on the Patreon back when we used to really deal with the Patreon before we built the expansion. Yeah, 2020, she sent this. And I happened to come across it, and it's fantastic. I probably should find a better title, or at least one that's a little more, I don't know.
I like this one.
Respectful. I call this Ding Dong, I'm Dead. And it's a great story about kind of a family lineage of a certain kind of ability.
Yeah, unique. Very unique.
Yeah. So without further ado, let's hear Lindsay's tale.
This story involves the women on my mom's side of the family. It started with my grandma. When a family member passes away, that night she will be visited by them. She will receive a knock on the door. It won't stop until she answers. Of course, no one will be there, but she'll just know and wait for the call. Well, a few years ago after my grandma passed, I was home up reading while my parents were asleep. Around 1 a.m., my mom rushes to the door, scaring the crap out of me. I asked her what she was doing. She looked bewildered.
"You didn't hear the knocking?"
she asked. She said something out into the night sky, then shut the door, like a goodbye to whomever it was. The next day, we got the call we were expecting. My mom's aunt had passed away in her sleep. I'm awaiting the day that it will be my turn to say goodbye to the departed. There's a lot more I can share. I'll send another story soon of my attachment that has followed me for 10 years. I love you guys. Keep up the amazing work.
We love you too, Lindsay.
Love you too, Linz.
That's a cool family ability.
Yeah, that was a perfect little story. Just a great little, like, I just picture, almost reminds me of like a children's book. And the cover would be just like a woman at the front door with the door open, hair blowing in the wind in a dark, starlit night. And she's just saying goodbye.
Yeah.
Such a cool concept.
Definitely sweet.
Yeah. So Ding Dong, I'm Dead is probably not the best title. No, it's not.
Definitely let us know if that ever does happen.
Yeah.
Although hopefully
it's many, many, many years from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to ask.
Yeah, for sure. But thank you for sharing that intimate story, Lindsay. And she did send an audio file of apparently an attachment, some crazy things going on in her life since that we're definitely going to have to get to at some point.
That would be an awesome family tradition, you know? I mean, because there's some like...
There's a closure there.
Yeah, there's a closure and like, oh, they're not... I mean, they're dead, but they're not dead. You know, you know, there's a confirmation of their moving on to the next plane. Goodbye.
For sure, yeah.
Very, very nice. It's funny because you hear about crisis apparitions, but I've never heard of one like that where it's this lineage sort of thing where it's a... You know?
Passed down. Yeah. Well, a lot of those abilities allegedly are passed down through the female side of the family.
Yeah.
As far as when it comes to like, I know a lot of the Appalachian folk magic and those abilities, the second sight, that kind of thing. Except in the case of Steve Stockton, there are rare, I don't know if it's rare, but it's less common for men to receive those abilities in the blood. Anyways, thank you so much, Lindsay. That was fantastic. Yes. And Merry Christmas to you, sweetheart. She's helped us out a lot in the hole.
She does the timestamps for the show, which is really important for us, so.
Exactly. When we're sweating and breaking our fingers trying to get the premiere out on time, the timestamps are done ahead of time, thanks to Lindsay Maves. So you can all give a round of applause if you're in the premiere chat tonight.
Yay! Yay! Cool. Well, this is a good time, I think, for a Christmas story, a Christmas haunting. This was submitted to us by Lauren. And this happened on Christmas Eve, obviously. And this is a cool tale. We were at the Stanley over the summer, but we didn't get to stay the night. So now you can stay the night with our storyteller here and hear the experience.
I just heard your Colorado stories, and I thought I would add one to the Estes Park. We stayed at the Stanley Hotel in 2017 for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Newly divorced, wanted the kids to have a different experience. It was more or less so they wouldn't feel sad and just something different. So we go, the room we're staying in is a little bit small. They move us to room 413 because it's not very crowded during that time. I didn't know at the time it is considered a haunted room where you get knocks on the door and there's like a blue light with like a man's face in it or something. I don't understand exactly. I don't remember because we just didn't know at the time. And that night we get up in our pajamas, we play board games, we have a great time. And we put our stockings up around the room and then put all the presents in the closet. I'm sleeping in the large bed and my two oldest are in cots underneath the windows of the different windows that are either side of the corner because it's a corner room. And my youngest is in this large oversized chair that she just loved. And the moon was bright that night and it could kind of shine through. It's almost like a dusk, so you could see everything still. It wasn't like pitch black by any means. And I hear a little boy running up and laughing above our heads. Now we're on the fourth floor. There was no fifth floor. I've heard that before. And part of my mind's like, I wonder if they're just doing that somehow for like extra media or whatever for the Stanley being a haunted hotel or something. It's something that you could technically manufacture. And that's my cynical brain. Next thing I know is there's three huge bangs on the door. Bam, bam, bam. Like, woke me up, shot out of bed. No one's there. And get back into bed. I'm laying there and I can hear something rustling through our different stockings we have stored around the room. And into the presence in the closet. And I'm thinking maybe it's a mouse or something. You know, I'm kind of sleepy and groggy at this time. And all of a sudden I feel something on my feet. And I'm like, what is that? And I move my feet around, thinking it's like the bed sheet tangled or something. And it's like a little hand. And it's like how kids will do when they're massaging like a parent or something on their shoulders or, you know, they go from palm to the tip of their fingers, and they were alternating all the way up from my foot, up my right side. So I was laying on my left side, right hip, all the way up underneath my arm, and then they just stop. By this time, I am breathing so hard. My tachycardia is like going crazy. And I, at the same time, I'm trying to whisper, yell at my youngest who's near the bed, hey, wake up. Because she really wanted to see a ghost. The next morning, I get up. By the way, I just fell asleep. It's like all those stories, people are like adrenaline filled. It's like your body just goes, okay, we're done. Peace out for the night. Next morning, my 15-year-old hears my story. He's like, oh my God, Mom, I totally saw somebody sit on the end of my bed. And the little hands went up his side too. And then he like turned over on his back and then they pressed against his chest for like 5 seconds. So that was kind of crazy. And that happened. Didn't have anything happen the next night, but our presents for my daughter were missing. The jewelry and stuff that I'd gotten for her, like jewelry making, was gone out of the bag that had been rustling the night before. So never found that either. But yeah, that's it. Hope you guys enjoy.
You know, great little story, perfect setting in the Stanley Hotel at Christmas.
It's a ghost thief.
Yeah.
Klepto.
What do they need on the other side?
I don't know, weird. I mean, unless it's like trained from someone in the hotel to go steal things and bring it back to them.
Like a frightener like a situation.
Like one of the ravens from the first story, but... So weird.
You do have the fairies that actually steal,
well,
right?
Aside from fairies,
they don't steal. Well, they want gifts. I guess the gnomes are the stealers.
We need to go back to the fairies.
I know.
We did the fairies.
It's always fairies, I know. I'm just saying... They take.
But if you think about it, it was costume jewelry for her daughter. And these were children hand ghost hands. So they probably were like wanting a Christmas Eve gift.
You just connected a thing in my brain.
I'm thinking like, maybe this is my mom giving me my present. You know?
You just fired my synapses with that.
You're welcome.
It could definitely be little children ghosts just appreciating the fake jewelry, wanting to do their own dress up.
Yeah.
What if you saw like a little tiara and some rings floating around the room?
It'd be adorable.
Because they were wearing it.
Yeah.
In on ghost form. Yeah, interesting. But you found, so this is just, you know, it's one of the stories you're like, okay, yeah, what was it? You can't know for sure. Of course, the touching and pushing, that's going to make a huge imprint, mm-hmm. Pun not intended.
Children's laughter and running on the roof is pretty creepy too.
But you could say, okay, that's, like she said, could be something set up or mishearing, but you found a really interesting corroboration to this, Chris, did you not?
Yeah, I did. This is a quick clip I found on YouTube from a guy who went several years ago and wasn't planning on doing any sort of ghost hunting kind of thing. But of course, the Stanley Hotel is notoriously haunted, or at least allegedly. You know, you can argue the credibility of the hauntings. It obviously has a reputation because of the film, The Shining. But this is his quick little experience that he had there in the same room. And I wanted to touch on that. I thought that was so interesting that our story, she was given a certain room, but it was too small. So she talked to the staff, and then they gave her, unbeknownst to her, a well-known haunted room that the staff knows to be haunted. So that was kind of funny.
So this account comes from the same room.
Yeah.
This hotel is so freaking noisy. I was hearing stuff all night long. Jennifer slept pretty good. I was like a freaking cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
What's that mean?
And we were hearing footsteps, doors slamming. The problem is this. There's a lot of people staying here for that weird concert. So like everyone was up partying and drinking till like 3 a.m. and people were just running around the hotel. Some people were just drunk and acting stupid. Other people were just roaming the halls of the hotel all night long looking for ghosts and stuff. So it's kind of hilarious. One could argue that the people that are experiencing noises and things here at the hotel are actually experiencing other people staying at the hotel looking to find ghosts and stuff. I'm not even kidding. There were people roaming these halls all night, talking to ghosts and taking pictures every 5 feet that they walk. It was just ridiculous. And then there was some argument across the way. And then things got really weird. I kid you not. Something moved my covers in the middle of the night, and it scared the absolute dog shit out of me. I'm not even going to lie. It scared the crap out of me. Yeah, it was pretty kooky. Then we heard a bunch of footsteps that actually came inside the room. That was creepy. It was just like a foot or two from the bed and inside the room. We were just chilling on the bed, and all of a sudden it sounded like someone was barging in here. And when I walked up to the door, it was open about that much, just like that. But you probably can't see the sign here, but the door automatically deadbolts when you close it shut like that. So that was strange. So just all kinds of activity. It was pretty interesting. Parts of it, I'm not going to lie, though, were scary. The thing with the covers kind of freaked me out. So room 413. It's a good room to hang out and get some experience with some of this goofy paranormal stuff. So there it is. Lots of activity. Be safe.
So basically he's saying there, like, you know, you can obviously imagine that there's crazy people are walking around trying to find ghosts. There's drunk people. So probably what most people are hearing are just other people in the hotel and thinking it's ghosts. But then there's a turn where he's like, but what's really weird, I kid you not, was that in the middle of the night, something pulled on my covers. Just like she had felt in her bed, the blanket move, and then like the kids come up and tickle on the side or what, massage on the side. So it was just kind of interesting corroboration that he went there skeptical.
Weird, yeah.
Yeah, I like that he seemed like a skeptical kind of guy going in. He's like, you know, it's kind of hilarious.
Right.
People run around looking for ghosts, how annoying it is. People must be running upstairs, and then all of a sudden, like, you're getting covers pulled off.
Yeah.
And door opening, and then you're like, and it was actually got really freaked out. So I love when people get that turn, you know? Kind of that skeptic curmudgeon switch to believer.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely makes it a little more credible.
Yeah. So room 413, if you stay at the Stanley,
avoid it or seek it out, depending on your preference.
Yeah. Very cool.
You will get a haunt. Thank you for that story.
Yes, thank you so much. We'll have to stay in that room when we go back.
Well, let's crank the heat up on the fire and make this place a little warmer with our next incredible story, Chris. What's coming up?
That is a wonderful question I'm about to answer. Ooh, this is a treat. This is a very unique story.
This is
a treat for you out there. A Christmas treat, if you will.
You're such a great grandpa.
Although this doesn't relate to Christmas per se, but I love this story. It's very unique. It's a sort of a vengeful ghost kind of tale.
Oh, the vengeful ghost.
But a helpful vengeful ghost in a way. This I call Burglars Busted by Ghosts. I was trying to do like a Ghostbusters sort of title reference, but I kind of failed. But anyway,
You get the idea. This comes from Samson. And enjoy.
Hey, boys. Just want to say I'm a huge fan of the show. Love what you guys are doing. I'm the youngest of seven brothers myself, so it definitely feels like home when I listen to your podcast. My family has been in the States for a long time, and I don't know if it's something in our blood or what, but we just seem to be a magnet for the bizarre and the strange. And I've got enough stories to fill an encyclopedia, but I'll start you off with this one. When I was a kid, we had moved to a small town in Northern California, and my mom was trying to find us a place to rent real quick. And she found this little house. It was like, it was a trailer basically. And we went there to go pick up the keys from the old tenant. And it was like something out of a movie. I mean, we walk up to the door and she's just exiting the house right as we walk up. And I swear, this lady was pale white and had the fear of God in her, and told my mother, "This place is cursed. There's an evil within this house, and you should not stay here." But we had no other choice, you know. We had just moved there because our family had asked us to come up to be closer to them, and we needed a place to stay. So the lady gave my mom the keys. We went inside the house. My mom, being the Catholic that she is, she went over every doorway in the house and blessed it with holy water, you know, said a prayer, and nothing happened. You know, we didn't see anything crazy. We always had people in our house. Everything was good. And then one night we had gone out for a family dinner, and we came back and we saw that our garage door had been open, like somebody had broken in. And we're looking through the house and everything's still in its place. And we don't understand, you know, what the hell happened, why the house was broken into, but nothing was taken. So we went next door and we asked our neighbors. We said, did you see anything weird? And they said, yeah, we heard two grown men scream, and then we saw them run out of your garage. And apparently, I guess whatever was haunting our house, you know, they took a lock in my mom and scared off whatever burglars came inside, which is wild.
It's like Home Alone ghost.
Home Alone ghost.
That's funny, though.
Yeah, what? It's two burglars?
Yeah.
I did just picture Joe Pesci and the guy from Bushwhacked, Daniel Stern? Anyway,
yeah.
That's such a great visual.
It's a fun one.
Yeah. That'd be a great security system.
Security
to have.
Guard ghosts. That would really punish them, too. You know, like they would not.
Oh, yeah.
They probably would refrain from breaking in other homes after experiencing something like that.
Yeah. If you have some like supernatural attack on your.
Dude, that's a product we could sell.
Oh, dude, that's a great idea. To reduce repeat offenses.
Like a paranormal. Yes, exactly. It's some sort of show that goes on that freaks people out.
Oh, dude. Yeah, like a light show, holographic sort of situation.
Very niche gift.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I thought you were talking about actually trapping a ghost and repurposing, which of course we couldn't do. But I was going to go along with that idea and say, like, yeah, if like you're trying to get your kid to stop smoking pot or something, you could have him come out of the pipe.
That is so
dumb. He's puffing, you know, just like there could be a whole.
Your mind goes to the most far out places.
I'm talking about a real situation. Yeah. But
well, if I died, you could use me for that. I'd help out.
How would I harness you?
Yeah. Well, it'd be volunteer. You'd tell me what.
How
you know,
would
we
I
have ideas together?
You know, those,
I can be harnessed.
Those Ghostbusters ghost traps, what you need.
I'm harnessable.
You'd probably have more interesting things to go on to.
Yeah, then the one time John's home gets burgled in the century.
It sounds pretty fun. We could do like the Frighteners thing where we set it up. I can make you a lot of money.
Yeah, okay.
Spook people for you.
Anyway.
Yeah, and how do you get paid?
Well, you spook someone's house and then you leave.
How do you get paid? What's the point?
I do it out of love.
You do it pro bono?
Yeah, I'm on the other side. I feed off the love like a love slug. We've talked about love slugs.
That's true.
All right. I'm interested.
All right. I'll talk to you about it later when I'm dead.
Keep it on the back burner. But yeah, this is interesting. So there's a quick follow-up to his story that might point to possible reasoning for his
haunting
place to be haunted. Yeah, this is really interesting.
Let's hear it.
But another wild story from there is that I don't really know how to explain this, but I was about 10 years old and I had this dream that all these Native American women in white, old white gowns were running through my house and they were murdering my family with hatchets. And I woke up and I told my mom about it. And it turns out that on a little island that was right near the town that we lived in, there was a massacre that happened back in the 1800s where these white men ran through a village and massacred a bunch of Native Americans with hatchets while they were sleeping, women and children. And I'd never heard that story. And I honestly don't understand why that vision was shown to me in a dream. But just goes to show there's a lot out there that you can't explain. Take care, guys.
Thanks, man.
Wow, thank you for that story.
Yeah.
That's great.
Dark.
Yeah, that definitely would be an intense dream.
Yeah, very.
I mean, you could see why there'd be angry spirits.
Yeah, and if he hadn't heard that story before about the island massacre and had that dream, it does sound like there could be some energy kind of continually residing there, haunting that land.
Yeah.
Yep.
You found out some info about this.
Yeah. So initially, I wasn't sure what island he was talking about, what massacre, and because there were several in the area I was looking up. There was the Bloody Island Massacre of 1850 in Clear Lake, California, on an island there. But after talking to him, confirming it was actually the Indian Island Massacre of 1860, just 10 years after the previous one in Clear Lake. But yeah, super crazy story, disturbing. It was it's now called the Tulawat Island. There's a village there, Tulawat, and this is just outside Eureka in the, in the waters there, Eureka, California. And I guess after the gold rush, a lot of settlers had moved in.
That's where we got the term from, Eureka.
Exactly.
It came from the town name because they found gold there.
Right. Which, of course, led to this terrible tragedy. It's a really messed up story because, as the story goes, from the papers at the time, it was a handful of guys who came over in the night and slaughtered hundreds of Indians.
Women and children, right?
Yeah.
Weren't the men out hunting or something?
Yeah. There was a world, it's called like the World Renewal Ceremony, I think. Some kind of...
It's crazy.
Yeah, World Renewal Ceremony that they were having. So everyone of the Wyoti people were gathered together. There were mostly women, children, older men, while the young men were out on a hunting party. And they came in and just, with hatchets and other things, just ravaged these people. So just a handful of people, handful of men that came in and just decimated the island. And what's crazy is like, it sounds like, and not to get on this too long, obviously, but it's a whole fascinating and disturbing story. It just reminds me, because at the time, the papers and the more prominent citizens at the time were even outraged. Yeah. Like they wrote about it in the papers. There was this account, I'll link to in the show notes, but basically the non-Indigenous people there, the settlers, most were horrified of what happened because it was just this handful of people. And it just reminds me of like, you know, we hear stories throughout history and some that's happened recently where a village or some very valuable property,
oh, yeah.
You know, maybe an island or a place on an island might get devastated. And you see quickly after the urge to take over that land. In this case, I did a little research and found that a German fellow who came over 10 years earlier, he had moved to Eureka like a year before this happened and then bought the island a few days before.
Oh, wow. So it could have been like a clearing out.
Yeah,
the people.
If he was involved. Anyways, yeah. We don't have to get into all that right now.
We don't know. So.
Yeah, he did come out and say that he gave his testimony that he heard the screams and the terror that was going on from a room on the island.
Oh, man.
But apparently had no idea what was going on. So that's his story.
Yeah.
But I'll link to that in the show notes because I think it is a fascinating story. So you guys should check out that history. But anyways, it's a tragic story. But that could obviously, I mean, this goes back to the old, you know, the whole poltergeist movie concept that brought into popular mindset the idea of like, you know, the sacred grounds, Native mm-hmm. American lands that were devastated. And this land itself, you know, whether that's just a stereotype, and I know a lot of people don't like that connection, but any place that's has sacred meaning or has been where slaughter has happened, you're going to have
Gettysburg.
I mean, children having nightmares about it, you know, 100 years later.
Yeah.
And this was also not only the place of this massacre, it's not sacred just because of that, but also from what I've read, it's also the place of creation for them.
Oh, wow.
This island in particular. So anyways, thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah.
It illuminated a lot of stuff. Interesting history in that area. And we'd like to hear the rest of your crazy stories. It sounds like you have a good many.
Send them in. Oh, next up, this is a cool tale. Cool little short experience. This comes from...
Oh, Canton, Ohio.
Oh yeah, Canton, Ohio, October 2020.
Whoa! That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, close to where we are. And close to Halloween, it appears. And what a good time to have this experience. This is a unique story from Javian? Javian?
Jovian? We're really good with names. How would you pronounce this, John? Jovian.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, let us know, Jovian.
Okay, I call this Sneakers.
Hello, Belief Hole. First, let me say that I absolutely love the show and would like to thank you for everything you do. I've had many experiences in my life that could be considered paranormal. So many, in fact, that I wasn't sure where to start in sharing. I decided a specific and one-off instance with validation would be best. It was October, and the air was just starting to get that crisp chill. It was during sunset, when the shadows are long and sprawling across the ground. I was coming back inside from taking my dog, Worm, out for a walk. As we rounded the corner of the house, I heard footsteps coming up the driveway. I looked, expecting to see one of the neighbor children running up to pet Worm. However, when I looked up, all I saw at first was nothing. Confused, I stared at the drive until two small sneakers with thin ankles sticking out of them materialized right before my eyes. They were a ghostly translucent white. Before I had time to even react, Worm started frantically pulling on the leash and crying out. He saw them too. Panic washed over me, and with pure adrenaline, I darted to the door around the side of my house, managing to pull Worm with me. No small feat, as he is an 80-pound bully, and literally fell into the house before slamming the door behind me. I told my roommate what happened and she turned white. She went on to tell me that she had had her own experience while I was gone. In the upstairs hallway, she had heard a distinctive clap clap behind her, which startled her so badly that she yelped. But when she yelped, something yelped back, mocking her. I hope to write with more of my experiences later on, and I'm about to sign up for expansion finally. Love you guys.
Aw, what a cool story.
Yeah. Definitely creepy that it mocked her.
Can you imagine that? The awareness there for sure.
Was that a friend? That was a friend?
Yeah, I think it was someone who was in the house. It wasn't happening at the same time.
The roommate. No, that was the story that they told Jovian.
Yeah, after he had seen the translucent legs in the sneakers.
Yeah, but I think it happened at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
While he was out walking the dog, this happened inside the house.
Yeah, so these things were going on simultaneously.
Oh, I didn't know it happened at the same time.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, definitely unnerving.
Yeah, because she said right there, telling me that she had had her own experience while I was gone.
So while he was on this walk, I guess. It's just nuts.
That's crazy.
I love that name for a dog, though.
Worm.
Came up to pet Worm.
Yeah. Great story.
Yeah, two little sneakers. It is the unique little sneakers walking. But yeah, that is creepy with at first it sounded kind of like a fun little story. But yeah, with the mocking mimicker, it's never a good sign.
Could just be a ghost kid playing, teasing.
Could be.
Not too malevolent.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah,
great little story.
That would be creepy to get mocked by, hearing the clap clap and then you yelp. Yeah. You're like, oh! And then it does the same thing. That would be terrifying.
Yeah, dude. And mean.
That would definitely agree.
Actually, it would hurt my feelings and scare me.
Write in and let us know what road this was. Because, that's an easy drive. I'd like to just drive down this some night, 3 a.m., see if I see little sneakers.
That's a great idea, Chris.
Yeah.
You can go by yourself.
Okay. I'll do it.
Okay.
Exposure therapy. Well, what's coming up in the expansion, Jer? For our member episodes.
That is a great question, Chris. It is Christmas time. And as you said, it is the time to tell mysterious tales. And I have a book that I've been wanting to get into for a long time called
The Old Magic of Christmas, Yuletide Traditions for the Darkest Days of the Year by Linda Radish.
And we're going to use that to explore a range of mysterious tales and origins of some of the traditions and things that we believe in around this time of year.
Yeah, and some really deep dives into some of the intriguing folklore and not just your typical, here's some Krampus stuff. This is going to be some really unique things that aren't talked about when it comes to Yule traditions around the world.
Exactly. And then we're going to go beyond that, I think, and do a little Christmas magic and miracles, if you will, talking about the classic story of the Christmas truce.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
And if you aren't familiar with this tale, it's an amazing thing that happened during World War I, where both sides put down their arms for a brief time, much to the dismay of their generals.
In the spirit of Christmas.
In the spirit of Christmas, and shook hands as men across the battlefield. I think a message that, especially this time in our history, is a great message to hear. It's a fantastic story. So we're going to be getting into that, as well as the usual strange and mysterious tales of the season.
Elves and aliens.
Elves and aliens. Anyways, it's going to be a fun grab bag of mysterious Christmas lore. So if you're in that spirit,
and you want to hear, even if you're not a fan of Christmas, even if you're anti-Christmas and it's...
What, like a Scrooge?
If you're a Scrooge and it bums you out, it's still going to be a fascinating episode full of mystery and wonder. So without further ado, here's a quick clip and then we'll get back to our remaining stories of the evening.
Why do brides make such wonderful ghosts?
And she goes on to say,
it is the bride's precarious position in life, one foot over the threshold of conjugal bliss, the other still planted in childhood. That puts her at risk. If the earth should break open between her slippered feet, she will teeter and tumble into the other world, never to return except as a ghost. Set her wedding during the supernaturally unstable Christmas season, and the opportunity for thrills and chills increases. Of course, most weddings go off with scarcely a hitch, but in the case of the mistletoe bride, the tragedy struck during the reception.
Yeah. Warning, sad story.
This is a sad story. But you need a little tragedy occasionally on Christmas.
It is a tradition.
To contrast the brightness of the spirit of the season.
I don't agree with that.
Okay. Maybe not. Maybe you don't need a tragedy. But tragedy is real.
Okay.
So this is the story of the mistletoe bride, guys. Imagine, it's Christmas night. The wedding's taking place at this great castle. You've got your traditional Christmas accoutrements, holly hanging from the halls of the castle, bunches of mistletoe celebrating the marriage of this nobleman. In this story, it's Lord Lovell, but the name of the original groom might be up for some debate. So Lord Lovell and his lady, his bride-to-be, are celebrating as you do the night of the wedding. But as the evening wears on, the bride suggests a fun game. A traditional game, a classic game we all know and love, hide-and-seek.
Oh, innocent.
The groom hides, and the cunning bride, of course, finds her mate.
Found you!
Discovers his whereabouts. But when it's her turn to hide, no one can seem to find her. In fact, no one finds her that night at all, or the next day, and even months later, she remains missing. She's vanished. All right, guys, hope you liked that clip. If you enjoyed it, go to Bleeful.com. If you're not a member yet, and click on the big red Join the Expansion button.
Double the episodes.
Double the episodes, fully produced. I think we have like 100 plus full expansion episodes just waiting for you with the click of a button.
Plus the whole archive first season.
And the whole first season that's archived. If you're wondering where season one is, there she blows.
And ad-free episodes, finally.
Yes.
So
get it. That's a big part of it. Yeah, it's part of the process of growing. But yeah, if you want the ad-free version of the unvarnished experience of being in the hole, then that is your place to go.
Yeah. All main episodes ad-free, along with the expansions.
Delivered straight to your RSS feed on your podcast app of choice.
For the price of a coffee, one coffee a month, you can get access to this. So go check it out. Link will be in the show notes for you guys. Easy peasy, Japanesey. It's magic. It's magic.
I hope you guys are really excited for the next story, because you get to go to a wonderful land known as Scotland.
Oh.
Scotland?
It's not a Scottish accent.
That was Sean Connery is.
That's terrible. It's not Scottish.
Would you like some whiskey?
Would you like some whiskey?
Do it again, Chris. That was a great impression of Sean Connery.
Would you like some whiskey? I get port in a glass.
Yay! Not very good. That makes my heart smile.
Yeah, but we got a great story from Shane, a Scottish listener of ours. This is a very cool tale, very unique, as we like to do in the whole unique it up. So thank you for this, Shane. I don't think I really need to introduce this other than to say I call this the Deer of Gore Bridge. This took place in Gorebridge, Scotland in 1998.
Hi, guys. Really enjoy the show. I just discovered it like a month ago, and I've been listening to it a lot at night. Probably not the best time to be watching it. My name's Shane. I'm from a little village in Scotland called Gorebridge. That's G-O-R-E, like blood and gore. And I've always thought it sounds like something out of a Stephen King novel, but it is a real place, and you can Google it. And I'll come back to why I'm making a point about the name of the place. My story is in, I think it's 1998, because I remember playing Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation 1 with my cousin the night before this incident took place. We got up early to go hunting rabbits. My cousin was really into ferreting, which is, you know, getting ferrets and sending them out to catch rabbits. These little weasel animals, if people don't know what a ferret is. And yeah, we got up early and it was that sort of very dark blue sky, twilight, and it was very wet and the floor was very like dewy. I like everything had this sort of like mist all over it. And my jeans were getting soaking actually from the long grass, I have to remember that. And we went deeper into the glen near our village and we got further into the woods. And we were looking for, obviously, rabbit, but we saw a deer, which, although not rare, I've very rarely seen them. Usually they would just run away. You would catch one at the corner of your eye and your dog would bark at it and that would be it. But this was like a large deer and we were both, you know, somewhat taken aback by it because it was an amazing sight to see. And then there was just something weird about this deer. Like it was walking at a different speed from how its legs looked like it should be going, if that makes sense. We were in very hilly ground. It was very uneven and it seemed to be going in a straight line. And it was walking, you know, somewhat slowly away from us. And then it seemed to get stuck on a tree, or it did get stuck on a tree and it didn't move. And we thought, oh, maybe it's, you know, its antlers got trapped in the branch, something like that. And we went over because we wanted to help it. So we walked down and it was like, as I say, it's very uneven ground. You don't want to twist your ankle. We walked over to it and it just seemed to flicker as we were walking towards it. Like it seemed to be there 1 second and it wasn't, then it was back. And then it suddenly, it was like 6 or 7 feet away from where it was. It just was there and then it was somewhere else. Like it skipped a beat. And then it looked at us and then it continued to walk further into the woods, like into the deeper woods, where it was quite dark, especially at that time in the morning. And I don't know why, but we both just did not, we were both freaked out about it. I mean, it went from something almost majestic to something very sinister. And we went home, and when my parents got up, because he was staying at my place, they didn't believe us, obviously. They just thought we were up too late playing video games and we were tired. And it was just because we were overtired that we saw something. But how we could both see the same thing, I don't know. And then they're like, oh, is that like your video games? Even though video games aren't about hunting deer. So anyway, that went in the back of my memory bank. Then years later, I came across a story about Gore Bridge, as I was talking about it. All these UFO reports coming from my little village, that it's some kind of hotspot. And when I spoke about this to my uncle, he told us a story about how he saw a bright light, an orb, one night when he was walking back from the pub. And again, obviously, my auntie was like, yeah, he had one too many at the pub and whatnot, but he's adamant he saw something as well. So that's three people from my family that are convinced they've seen something strange in Gore Bridge.
Strange indeed.
Gore Bridge is a freaky name.
Well, it's kind of funny because it gets its name from Gore River, or the River Gore, apparently. I'm not sure how you say it, but it's interesting that I think the town of Gore Bridge takes its name from that, and it was something about the mill in town was used to make gunpowder.
Oh.
That's a very apt name for it, because what is, you know, gunpowder makes war, war makes gore, Gore Bridge. Just kind of a,
huh. You really know how to stretch those nerves, Jer.
Well, it's not a conspiracy. I just thought it was interesting. Yeah. But yeah, it's a mysterious place. A
hotspot, apparently.
Yeah, I came across an article in The Scotsman talking about it being a UFO hotspot. So it's not just his family. It's apparently kind of known for that. And this is just outside Edinburgh? I'm not sure how you say it. Edinburgh? They're right outside there.
Glitching deer. I mean, that was kind of the crux of the story.
I feel like we've had a couple of those.
Yeah. Well, we did that not deer episode. And I think on that, even though it's a different phenomenon, I think we did have a
glitching sort of situation.
Yeah, we've definitely had glitching creatures.
Just deer in general. Remember that story I told you that came in? I don't think we've read it yet, where they saw that deer and the friend tried to flank it. I don't want to ruin it, but I'm not sure if we'll get to it.
Well,
but
yeah, why don't you give like a little short rundown of it?
Maybe we should drop that story in.
We could, yeah. We drop that in.
Give a little extra bonus for y'all.
A little Christmas treat.
I was taking a walk with my friend Mike at the Chippewa Nature Center in Midland, Michigan,
It was about 2010 or 2011. Suddenly, he said,
"Whoa, what is that?"
and pointed to the overgrown weeds at the edge of the woods. I took a look, and I saw what appeared to be the head of a deer poking up and staring at us. I immediately responded,
"It's a deer."
And he said emphatically,
"No, it's not."
As I looked a little harder, I could see that despite the fact that the head was right, there was something off about the shoulders.
"Yeah, you're right,"
I said. Everything below the neck we couldn't see, as it was sitting down or crouched and obscured in tall weeds and underbrush. It was still staring at us. Then he said,
"I'm going to try to get a closer look."
And he started to walk toward it at an angle off to the right. I said,
"Okay, yeah. I'll stay here and not take my eyes off it. Let's see if we can flank this thing."
So we took off and left me and the deer just staring at one another. We were definitely obvious about what we were doing. We were pointing and making no attempts to be sneaky. Then, suddenly, the thing stands up and turns to walk away, really twisting its neck around to keep its face directed right at me as it walked almost directly away. Now, and there's no other way to say this, this deer was suddenly not a deer at all. It had a deer's head, but a human's body. This is the moment that plays over and over in my mind, like a scene from a horror movie. It didn't have any antlers, but it had the large ears, big black eyes, normal deer coloring, and an elongated snout. But otherwise human arms, shoulders, legs, and the typical gait of a person. It was just walking away. This next part is also odd, because at this point, I broke into a run at full speed in an effort to keep it in sight. I was closing on it fast, and it was still watching me. But for some reason, it didn't accelerate at all. At this point, it began to pass behind the overhanging trees, and for the first time, our eye contact was broken. It was at this moment that I went from a full-on run to a pretty violent dead stop. Reality had just caught up with me, and I was suddenly completely terrified. The first thing that stopped me was kind of silly, which was the thought that whenever you see a single deer in Michigan, it's never alone. I remember thinking,
what's waiting for me in those woods?
That's when I realized that it was only walking away, despite the fact that I was running. Going slowly seemed to be important to this thing, as if to make sure that I could follow it. It was more important for it to be followed than it was for it to get away. That really scared me. It vanished into the woods as my friend was just getting back to me, and he said,
"Where'd it go?"
I answered,
"Got away, man. I started to follow it, but I got scared. Please tell me you just saw what I just saw."
And I'll never forget that he just simply said,
"It had a man's body."
Strangely, despite just both witnessing this, we were somehow completely calm. That bothers me in retrospect. We were mindful enough to get the hell out of there, but there were people all over doing stuff and being busy. And this thing was so stealthy that we almost missed it. When I got home, I searched the internet for any similar experiences, and I found nothing. Not one story or YouTube video or anything. 10 years later, the net is filled with stories about, quote, skinwalkers and, quote, Wendigo and stuff. Something that I find really creepy is that many posts say to, quote,
avoid making eye contact, as this is how they attempt to lure you into the woods,
end quote. It was the exact moment that my eye contact with this deer man was interrupted that I stopped giving chase. So basically, the skinwalker lore describes my exact experience. This memory bothers me a lot. I hear stories about stuff like this all the time now, and sometimes they are creepy, but nothing can prepare you for how absolutely terrifying it is when you see something in reality that changes your definition of reality. Suddenly, monsters are real, and apparently, one lives in my hometown. I'm just relieved that I had somebody else with me when this all happened, so I know that it wasn't just some Dow chemical-induced hallucination or something. Thank you for taking the time to read my story.
Follow-up.
After we reached out to Winston to let him know we're going to tell a story, he had this additionally to say.
Thank you. It'll be pretty cool to hear you guys discuss this on the show. All coolness aside, though,
I hope that your listeners take it seriously, and ideally, as a very real warning. After it happened, and I was able to look back on it from safety, I felt very much as if I had gotten more than a little lucky. So I hope that sharing my experience can serve to help some others to stay safe. Thanks again, Winston.
Yeah, nice. Great connection there, John. Glad you grabbed that.
Thank you. I'm really usually quite good at connections on the show.
That was great.
I bring a lot to the table.
You do. You do, sir. And of course, when it comes to the Wendigo and the Skinwalker.
Yeah, there is a lot of conflation, I think, online with the Skinwalker and the Wendigo. Skinwalker specifically being Navajo and in the Southwest. And the idea of these things kind of move about, and you have the Wendigo that's depicted as very much like whatever this entity is that's seen out there. And the Wendigo, I think, traditionally is something that takes the form of your greatest fears, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Wendigo is, it has to do with cannibalism.
Oh, that's right.
And it's the cannibalism, it's the eating of another person, another human. Now, that's part of the lore that makes someone become the Wendigo. That's part of the tradition.
Ugh.
So it's, I mean, the portrayal of, you know, the antlers and the deer head, it's a very online thing. But I don't think when people see things like this for real in the wild, it's necessarily a Wendigo, because I'm not sure how much that is accurate. But there are accounts of this. Whatever it is, Steve Stockton had an experience as a kid.
Oh, yeah, going way back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these things are around, and despite whatever you want to call them or label them or how these things get conflated with the lore in the history, it seems like there's something out there.
For sure.
But thank you so much for those stories, guys. The first one being from Shane with the glitching Gorebridge deer, and the lure from Winston A. Bailey from Michigan.
Yes, thank you, neighbor.
Fascinating. Shane's story of the Gorebridge glitching deer, it reminds me of something other dimensional or even like simulation based. Is it a clue of how our reality is shaped?
We always think that when you hear about like the glitching makes me think of like, you know, an NPC in a video game or something hitting a vector can't pass through.
Something's not working quite right.
Yeah. Interesting.
Fascinating stuff. Let us know what you guys think in the comments below if you're on YouTube.
Yeah. It could be a good region to explore sometime on the show. All right. Well, next up we have the Dead-Eyed Feeder. This involves a phenomenon that our listeners out there will be very familiar with. We've covered on the show.
And I'm all too familiar with it.
The grandma mimic.
This comes from Rachel. Took place in 2017 at, of course, 3 a.m. And this might sound familiar because we've talked about this idea of the grandmother imposter. Mm-hmm. I had in my own account, I've talked about the show before. I won't talk about it again. But yeah, there's something about, I don't know, things imposturing people close to you. But then there's always that giveaway of the eyes.
Yeah.
And for some reason...
Oh, good point. I forgot about that. But that is involved the story.
Well, let's do the story and then we will riff it up. Dead-Eyed Feeder. I don't even know where to start. I haven't shared this with anyone ever because I didn't want to be seen as crazy or a liar. It was 2017. My grandma, who I was very close to, had passed away a little over a year earlier. Leading up to this event, I'd been waking up exhausted, like I'd barely slept at all. One night in particular, I woke up about 3 a.m. with a heavy feeling on my chest and an immense sense of dread. It was in that hazy moment when you're trying to get your bearings that I saw a figure standing by the side of my bed. Immediately, I was awake, like awake, awake. I thought someone had broken in. The room was dark, and this thing was darker than dark. I tried to turn my head, but my body was frozen stiff. I know people will say this is sleep paralysis, but no, I was wide awake, could feel my body tingling from head to toe, hear my daughter's fan, smell the oil diffuser in the room. I was awake. This thing slowly got closer to the bed, right next to me, and it looked like my grandma. Right down to her necklace she always wore. That's when I noticed three other shadows at the end of the bed, just standing there and watching. This grandma mimic bent down to put its face in mine, and I saw its eyes. They were not my grandma's. They were like dead fish eyes, big black pupils with that dead glazed over look. I was trying to move, to get up, to run, because I was terrified. It was making a sucking sound. Not loud like a vacuum, just breathing in, but it never stopped to breathe out. I was crying in my head, started praying for God to wake up my daughter and have her turn on the hall light. And as soon as I prayed that, my daughter began crying, saying, and turned on her bedroom light. I jumped out of bed and ran through this thing. And when I did, it was the coldest air I have ever felt. I ran to my daughter's room. I ended up sleeping there on her floor for the next couple of weeks with the light on. It still makes me sick to my stomach, and I'm crying even talking about it today. I'm not crazy, and I'm not a liar. Other things happen in this house, but nothing like that has ever happened again. Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah.
Oh, terrifying.
Yeah, we believe you. What a horrible thing to use too as a guise, you're someone's grandma, you know?
Yeah, it's sinister.
Traumatic. Underline sinister.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely trying to get the most fear out of someone, for sure.
Yeah.
And emotionally traumatic.
Exactly. That evil intention, it would seem like, especially since she was so close with her grandmother, to take that relationship and use it and twist it in a dark way and then terrorize you with it.
So do you guys get the impression that that thing was wanting her to know that it wasn't her grandmother, so it would terrify her even more? Or do you think it was trying to get like an easy pass to get close to her?
I think both.
Interesting.
You know, if it's there and it looks like your grandma and you kind of let it, maybe initially you're comfortable or you're...
It's a double whammy.
Exactly.
Creepy.
Well, I hope you have not experienced this. Oh, you said nothing like this has ever happened again. Well, that's good, Rachel.
Yeah, that is good.
We're glad for that.
Terrifying. I'm really sorry that happened to you. That is not fun.
Yeah. If you haven't heard my experience, Rachel, when I was a kid, little kid, this is my first dream I can remember. And it was a recurring dream I had for years, but it was the same kind of thing. But I was asleep. I'm pretty sure it was definitely a dream. We were all at dinner. I saw this thing outside the window claiming to be my grandma, asking to be let in. But grandma was already sitting at the table. And I think I was the only one that could see her. And she had black eyes like coal. And there's just this devastatingly unsettling, sinister, disturbing evil. I got this intention, evil intention from this thing.
She wanted those noonies.
And she wanted the noonies at the table.
Noonies are what Jeremy and I called noodles.
We were little.
We're little babes.
Noodles were noonies. Anyways, can't imagine what that would be like if you were actually awake and seeing this thing.
Yeah.
Or in that haze between, you know. So thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure it will help other people feel like they're not alone who might have experienced this.
Yeah, or crazy.
Yeah.
Because you're not. All right, our final tale for the evening.
Yeah, let's wrap it up with, well, I was going to say a warm story. I guess it's not necessarily, but it is.
It's not as intense.
Yeah.
But it is a wonderful story for sure.
Interesting.
And you got to have a disembodied hand episode in a belief hole listener stories. It's just strangely has to happen.
Strangely common. All right, let's hear this. This is called Give the Dog a Hand. And they'd like to be kept anonymous. So they shall remain so.
A friend of mine told me about a story about her aunt's dog. This was in the mountains in Montana. The dog was let out to go to the bathroom and came back with just a hand. It was green and scaly.
Dear God, what is that?
The owners took the hand to the sheriff's office to report it. Later the following day, they went back to get an update on the hand, and they told them they were crazy and that it never happened. Side note, listen to one of the recent episodes and y'all talked about a green scaly hand in that kid's bed. It reminded me of the story. Keep up the great work.
That's just a great little anecdote.
That's so funny. So they brought it to the police station the next day. The sheriff or whatever was like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. You're crazy.
You're nuts.
You were never here.
There must be a hand conspiracy.
We should file a Freedom of Information Act to get the the footage of the police office.
What if you found that just all over the nation, there were just tons of accounts that were just buried for some reason?
Hidden? This like invasion of hands from other worlds? Well, that's the thing. Initially, you'd think like, okay, it's a disembodied hand. It's a hand that's been removed from a body. Green and scaly, maybe decomposing.
Oh, that's true, I guess.
Maybe just a human hand. But then the fact that the weird you were never here side of it. Like you didn't come in and report this or bring us this dead man's hand.
It's just bizarre.
You had a weird little story.
Yeah, we didn't play it on this episode, but next Listener Stories episode, we have another great disembodied green, giant green hand behind a fence.
That will come from Jeremy. I've been wanting to do it for a long time.
Yeah.
A listener of the show. Another disembodied green.
They just keep coming.
Hand.
We'll get to the bottom of it. eventually.
Oh, we're going to solve the riddle.
Yeah.
If not by this Christmas, next Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Mark it down.
All right. Well, I think we have some very special people to thank.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We have some extra special people to thank. People that were generous and sent us some things at the P.O. Box.
Yeah.
Christmas came early.
It's been a while since we've been to that old P.O. Box, and there were some things in there.
Yeah, it was overflowing.
Thank you to everyone who's sent stuff. Some of you who have return addresses, I'm going to send a little card to say thanks.
You better do it if you say it out loud.
I will. Oh, I'm doing it. Some great authors wrote books. We're going to cover some of those books that sent stuff in. And a great special care package of sweets and goodies from...
the bakers.
I just ate that sugar cookie. Oh my gosh.
Isn't it ridiculous?
So good. So good. I hate that it was so good because I couldn't stop eating it.
Yeah. Normally I don't like sweets, but this was the perfect texture. Oh man.
Yeah. That was from Amanda and Angie of the Cake Conjurers. If you guys live in Texarkana, you should definitely look them up.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously good. I've been in that sugar cookie, like cream pie thing, and it was... You could not smile.
Yeah. And this is not an ad. They're members.
Not a sponsor.
Yeah, just delicious. Kind people.
Kind people that sent amazing treats. So yeah, check them out. We'll put a link in the show notes just for the heck of it. But definitely check those guys out. But yeah, lots of people to thank.
Yeah, we still have a lot of stuff to open, which is super, super generous of you guys.
Yeah.
Definitely some books I can tell. Maybe some artwork.
Ooh, books. I can't wait to check those out.
Oh, and also when we did open for sure, special friends of the show, Tyler and Lois.
Oh, yeah. Black Rifle Coffee.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
That was very sweet.
Yeah, he works for them and the coffee is wonderful. Thank you for helping us wake up.
Okay.
That was very sweet.
We miss you guys.
Yeah. I hope you're enjoying your oyster crackers.
I don't get it.
Remember Lois?
Uh-huh.
She was just, she had a thing for oyster crackers.
Okay. I had a lot to drink that night, so I don't remember a lot of what happened.
Anyway. yeah.
Anyway, this is John dropping in at the end of the episode. On a separate recording, we are sorry to inform you that thank yous will be unfortunately pushed back until next episode. I am just recovering from a 2-week-long stint with COVID and an ear infection, which made it extremely difficult to get this episode out. So hope you guys enjoyed the extra release on the main feed of one of our beloved expansion episodes, Real Encounters with Gremlins. If you haven't heard that one yet, check it out. We have one more episode before we take the break in the new year, so look forward to us next week dropping the final episode of season 5.
Yes!
All right, guys, thank you again for joining us today on the Strange Listener Stories 23. We will see you in the expansion if you're one of those lucky people to talk about strange Christmas mysteries.
And again, if you're watching on YouTube and you're in the premiere here, or if you're watching on YouTube anytime, feel free to hit the like button. It really does help us, and we really appreciate it.
Yes.
Thanks for being awesome.
Love you guys.
We'll see you next time
on Belief Hold.
Merry Christmas.
Access to all of those episodes, over 100, so